Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly movie podcast, and a happy new year as it is 2021, and we can at least say that. I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, joined as always by Ann Thompson, our editor at large. And well, it's weird to start the year with so much going on. I feel like we've lived through a lot of it already, but how have you been? First and foremost, in what we might call the very end of 2020 or whatever that was, how did your vacation go? Did you get some rest?
I had a lovely quarantine tested family thing here. I was mom to my daughter and her roommate and her boyfriend. You know, they couldn't go home to their parents, so I was the surrogate mom, and that was really fun. You know, making pancakes and all that kind of thing, and then singing karaoke carols in the living room. So I'm glad all of you were able to miss that. And
some things never change.
and then Nora and I packed up the car and took off on a driving trip up to Carmel to a cabin, a godforsaken cabin in the woods, really in an area that you could create a horror movie around, I swear. But we went off and did some great hikes and drove back down the coast and went to lots of different cool oceanside hiking places, and we had a lovely time.
And was it all a screen break for you, or did you squeeze in some movies or TV shows or anything like that?
Bridgerton.
Really? Well, I suppose it was only a matter of time.
If you know me and Nora, you know that's what we were watching.
All in one sitting,
right? A guilty pleasure, a very delicious guilty pleasure. Shonda Rhimes knows what she's doing. I grew up on Regency romances. What can I tell you, Eric? You are not the target audience.
I'm not judging. I get it. I just probably won't be watching that anytime soon.
The first episode, I said to Nora, this guy was behaving a certain way. And I said to her, this guy's a rake. And she said, what's a rake, mommy? She had no idea. Do you know the word rake? Does it mean anything to you?
It's only something that I would use in my front lawn if I had one. But when I hear you say it, it makes me laugh regardless. So
it's no surprise that that was one of the highest rated Netflix things. Along, yeah, by the way, with Midnight Sky, the George Clooney movie, which also did very well over the holidays, as I thought
it would.
No surprise
there. You did
enjoy
suspect.
The movie. It's not an Oscar contender necessarily, but they enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, easy viewing, I suppose. Well, I didn't watch a lot of stuff. I was sort of trouncing around Vermont and Massachusetts, trying to kind of stay off the grid as much as possible with the limited resources one has to do that these days. But it was funny when I was in Vermont, anytime I go somewhere, I try to watch a movie about a place that I'm going, and I hadn't really spent time in that state before. And it turns out that the kind of best known movie about Vermont is Baby Boom. So I revisited Baby Boom, which
Diane
I hadn't
King.
Seen in her. I mean, she's really funny. But the thing that's fascinating to me about watching it is that it's at once it seems sort of ahead of its time and super dated in terms of the way it deals with gender politics.
Yeah, very dated.
But, you know, then I started going on YouTube and watching a little bit of the series that came out of that movie. And I was thinking the concept, if you took away the maternal motivator there and just had this woman who sort of went from being pure workaholic and corporate drone to kind of finding her individuality and her entrepreneurship, you could have a more modern take on that story. There's something about it that is very 80s at the same time, which is just sort of fascinating. So.
Especially the padded shoulders. But I always love the way Diane Keaton looks in any of her movies, and she's She's one of my favorites. I think I always identified with her from Annie Hall days.
Yeah, you, there's something about the wardrobe that, yeah. that you adopted.
The masculine wardrobe.
I wasn't going to say that, but
the hats and the jackets, and now the big glasses, mm-hmm. obviously, which mm-hmm. is what women do at a certain point in time. But then we come back from our vacation, and I did get some rest, and it was delightful. Then we get back, and lo and behold, Trump has continued to go crazy. And yes. there's never a dull moment. So in the stress world of LA too, it's COVID central. So it's pretty locked down here. Pretty scary. Sirens going in the night like it used to do in New York back at the beginning of the pandemic. So it's a sad time and a disturbing, stressful time. And yesterday, we're taping this on Thursday, was the takeover of the Capitol building.
You thought, oh, we escaped all that bad stuff that was happening in the world.
The Capitol Police thought that they could handle it somehow. You look at the videos and you just see these people trampling over minor barriers and minor numbers of police to go right into the Capitol as if they were being almost allowed to do so.
You know, the thing that was so shocking to me about the Capitol incident was the way that it played out for everyone as this kind of surreal, never-ending movie. It was like suddenly something that seemed like it could be somewhat problematic for democracy became this explosion of rage, you know, that something that, you know, we were just going through the motions of certifying the presidency, but then it became this day-long excursion into seeing the ultimate outburst of Trumpism that we've been fearing all along. I mean, I remember like when we recorded our podcast in 2016 after Trump got elected, and it was like this real feeling of like solidarity. And in spite of all the shock and fear about what was going to happen next, that we all had sort of this common interest in keeping hope alive, feeling like there was some way for society to overcome whatever sort of threat to, you know, our collective sense of what America should be and how and what morality is, you know, that we could keep that going. And then what I saw yesterday, I felt like was the ultimate sort of challenge to that, because you could see just how much, you know, we get lost in this, in our bubbles, even when we're confronted with the worst possible outcome, you know, that it's easy to ignore the crazies until they jump the fences. And they literally did that. I mean, I don't think it's tasteless to look at it as this kind of almost like cinematic moment where we're experiencing the drama of America on the brink. Like that was just to see that live was something completely unclassifiable.
And it just shows you, I mean, the aftermath today is that you have all these senators and congresspeople, Republican and Democrat alike, who are scared to death and really angry, really, really angry. And Biden definitely takes the high road today with his, you know, proposal of Merrick Garland as the attorney general. I mean, the comparison is just very stark.
And the other thing is the irony of all this stuff was it was less than 24 hours after this Georgia runoff election, which was
we forgot
a triumphant
about in
moment.
The mix of it. But
and they called the election for John Ossoff in the middle of it. I mean, Warnock had won at 2 a.m. The networks called it for him. Then Ossoff in the middle of all this stuff. And that was a great moment. That was a culmination of what Stacey Abrams has been doing for a decade.
She's the hero. And I hope she gets to take over the Democratic Party and raise votes across the country for Democrats, because we need all the help we can get to keep this from ever happening again. And Georgia turned blue. It's because of her. But there's an argument today also that those two Senate races went to the Democrats because of Trump's behavior, because of all of his craziness and the way, and that McConnell knows that he lost the Senate because of Donald Trump. And he renounced him yesterday in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, I mean, that was riveting TV, too, is watching these speeches you know, it really felt you had, it was almost like a Frederick Wiseman movie or something. Or, it's like you're lost in the.
Or Jimmy Stewart and Frank Capra. You know?
Yeah, right. But they all want to be Jimmy Stewart in a Frank Capra movie. It's like everybody, even friggin' Lindsey Graham wants to have his triumphant moment where he does the right thing. And you're like, well, no, you're still a bad person. I mean, that's kind of the challenge now. It's like everybody
they have
wants
to govern,
to take
though.
The stage.
That's what's they so do. Great. You have 50-50 now in the Senate, and they are all going to have to get along. They have no choice, or nothing will happen.
Well, yeah, there's always the challenge with Democrats too is that they're a lot of them are actually good people, so they want to get along, whereas the Republicans have never really shown much interest in that.
There may be a change in the weather there. I mean, someone like Susan Collins, even if I'm furious with her for not going along with impeachment, she could be a moderate voice for the Republicans who sees the fit to represent her state and her constituents. That's what it's really supposed to be about, not
in any case
raw growth of power, which is what McConnell right. seems to represent.
Who's going to make the Mitch McConnell story? I want to know that. I mean, Jon Stewart did the best impersonation of him on The Daily Show back in the day. But that's, I mean, it's almost hard to see this as a real person when you see him on TV. It's like from his physical appearance to the sort of the hard line approach to politics that provides no opportunity for a back and forth conversation. You know, I was reading the Obama book over my.
We were right listening in the car.
And it's interesting.
It.
I don't know if you got to the part with McConnell, but he talked about McConnell as this incredibly awkward guy who, you know, terrible at making eye contact, doesn't, you know, really have any interest in hearing why somebody should support this or that bill. If it doesn't serve his interests, he's just not having that conversation.
No, it's all about brutal power. He describes him that way.
And that's why I think it's, you know, why are we spending, you know, minutes of a movie podcast talking about this stuff? I mean, one, because we care about society, but also because these are, it takes a certain kind of character to put yourself on the public stage. They are celebrities by and large, and you feel like you're consuming a story. It's a story in the real world. But
the good news is that once Trump is gone, the story is going to get a lot more boring. And that's fine with me.
Yeah, I don't want to think about Biden every second of my life. But I also
think he's going to get down to the business of governing and of licking this virus. And I'm really
that would be nice.
Very concerned about how that's going to play out. And you know, we have to push it back.
And the trickle down effect will be that maybe with time, we'll see how movie theaters can come back. How can film festivals start to, you know, if there's a more concerted effort behind the vaccine rollout and behind public safety standards and everything, then maybe our little section of the world starts to crawl out from under the rock it's been under, because that's obviously going to be something that will allow us to get to the next stage of all
well,
this.
They're not going to have drive-ins for Sundance. That's been canceled that because of COVID. But tickets have gone on sale. And I do recommend that anyone who has wants to see anything at Sundance, get on the case and order up their tickets now, because they're going to sell out very soon. They just went up today. You and I are planning our schedules in terms of what we're going to be able to see when it finally starts.
That is one thing that is kind of exciting about Sundance this year in a strange sort of way, is that anybody in theory has some kind of access to this festival. I do like the exclusivity of it. It does seem to still be exclusive, and that not everybody can buy it. Access to a virtual screening, but the idea of the lineup actually being available in all 50 states kind of democratizes the process through which these movies are put out into the world.
It's just a question of who's going to be enough of a cinephile to be willing to sample something that they've really never heard of from a filmmaker they've never heard of. I'd like to think that there are plenty of adventurous souls out there who are going to jump in with both feet. But the truth is, maybe our role as curators are going to be part of that process, too.
Oh, totally. Well, why don't we step away from Sundance for a bit, because one of the things that is significant about where we are right now in the year is that normally, we'd have a pretty good sense of where award season is going. But as the year starts, we've got a lot more to go in terms, not only in terms of how much longer films can qualify for the Oscars, but how many more films are left to be seen. So we were talking about
before
we started recording. There's a lot of stuff. Not to say it's going to completely change the tenor of the race, but
well, we haven't seen some of them. And for example, I just got a screener of U.S. versus Billie Holiday, which is now going to come out not at Paramount but Hulu. That was another change. There's Judas and the Black Messiah, which Warner Brothers is releasing. There's the Mauritanian, which I highly recommend, which I just watched, which STX picked up. It's actually a really good Guantanamo Bay story based on a memoir, based on a true person played by Tahar Rahim of A Prophet fame. And it's a great performance that he gives.
That's good to know. Yeah, so Mauritanian, we have U.S. versus Billie Holiday. You mentioned Judas and the Black Messiah. That of seems certainly like the kind of movie that, you know, it's an HBO Max Warner Brothers kind of a thing. But it seems like the kind of movie that really could sort of fill a gap in the award season conversations. A major, historical sort of epic of sorts with a great cast. It looks really promising. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing
Daniel Kaluuya definitely pops out of the trailer for Judas and the Black Messiah. He plays Fred Hampton, who's also a character, surprisingly enough, in Trial of the Chicago 7.
Right. So being able to have those
Kelvin
two sides
Harrison
of the story.
Jr. Yeah.
That should be fascinating to talk about.
And Andrew Day is supposed to be good as Billie Holiday. That's at least from what I've heard. That's a Lee Daniels movie.
And then you've got another Netflix title, which is Malcolm and Marie, which
slowly they're screening on Friday.
Yeah. Right. So that's one that Netflix bought several months ago out of in the midst of all the, you know, sort of fall season conversation, and seems to be a play for the performances. So those categories certainly could be shaken up irrespective of, you know, who seems to be the front runner in, you know, best actor. And then, we've got Cherry from the Russo Brothers.
Apple is releasing that, and Tom Holland is very, very good. It's based on a novel that's a memoirish kind of autofiction novel about a true story about a paramedic who comes back from Iraq with a lot of drug addiction issues, shall we say. It's sort of got it's a little bit of a Sid and Nancy quality. It has a romance at the center of it also. Tom Holland is excellent. All right, what are the unknowns as far as the Oscar race are concerned? I spoke to somebody today who said that they were getting lots of screeners, but most of them were from Amazon and Netflix, makes no sense. Yeah. So why, you know, if Nomadland, you know, you have a movie that's still going to hit theaters later on, and something like Promising Young Woman is still coming later. A lot of people haven't had access to see these movies, and they're being written about because they had qualifying runs, but they're not, you know, virtually, but they're not really available to people yet. So interesting, weird year.
Stay with Nomadland for a second, because that's an interesting one, since Searchlight made this decision to qualify it before the end of the year for the critics groups. Neither New York Film Critics Circle nor LA Film Critics Circle awarded Nomadland Best Film, which raises a really interesting question about just, you know, how much it was the right call to put it in that slot versus waiting till later. Because again, the movie didn't really come out. It had like a qualifying virtual thing and limited theatrical. So even though we've
very
been talking
few people
about
got
it for
to
a while,
see it. Maybe
still,
a few thousand
yeah,
people
still few
got to see it. And so the buzz that it would have, but it was at festivals. It did, Nomadland, let's not forget, it won Venice. It won the Toronto Critics' Choice. It's the front runner. I mean, this is, you're talking about it as though it's wounded in some way.
Well, no, I think that's what I want to
the critics groups actually
more
perceived it as a front runner, and Chloe Zhao won both.
She won direction.
Could be the front runner for best director Oscar. So I think it's doing fine. I mean, McDormand again, by virtue of the fact that she's won so many times, is, you know, people are going other ways, but she's really remarkable in the movie.
So the movie, that's still a major contender, but hasn't opened wide yet. And I guess it'll be interesting to see.
But it's not foolish of Searchlight, in just in terms of the awards,
right,
to keep it late. First of all, they were playing with what was going to happen with COVID, and this is how it's played out. But so they have to take the hand they've been dealt. But it's also not bad for these things to hit later than sooner.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, that helps in a way.
And the other case study in that respect is Soul, which opened on Disney Plus on Christmas, and that was it. There's not going to be anything more than that in terms of its release.
It was widely seen. That's the thing.
It seems to have been. Anecdotally.
You know the Netflix films, you know the Apple films, you know the Amazon, right. and these films are being widely seen. And so it's hard to see how the theatrical movies compete with that when they aren't in theaters. That's part of what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how do you just get people in? You can't get people into a screening room, period. Unless you
can get them into a virtual screening room, and they're being shown that way. The other movie we haven't mentioned is called The Little Things, which is a John Lee Hancock movie starring Denzel Washington, Rami Malek, and Jared Leto. And it was always scheduled to be open early in the year.
Why are you laughing? I can't, because the way that you said Rami Malek and Jared Leto, I couldn't tell if you were sort of positioning that as a plus or a minus. I'm not sure.
It's a straight on thriller, mystery thriller, and it's period. It's about corrupt cops. It's actually a good movie, and Denzel is great in it. So we'll see.
Okay, so there's a good amount of stuff there. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens once we have all of those movies, because as you say, Nomadland is a front runner. You've got the Netflix films. You've got a smattering of other kinds of things. It does feel like most of the major categories have sort of solidified in terms of what's got the heat. I mean, if you were to go down the
list. That's why these new movies are a question mark. You know, do they have a lot of catching up to do? Are people? I will say this: the people that I talk to in the Academy are catching up with things. Finally, they're starting to see them, and they're not thrilled. They're not super excited. It seems like a slim list to them.
A lot of diversity of subject matter this year, which I think makes it kind of fascinating. You know, do you go with Nomadland versus Trial of Chicago 7 versus, I don't know, News of the World versus Judas and the Black Messiah? It's like none of those movies really have that much to do with each other. So in that sense, I suppose it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, where is the conversation? What do people respond to in this particular moment when there's so
always
much else
a zeitgeist
on.
Question. So Nomadland, as you wrote very eloquently, is definitely hitting the zeitgeist in a certain kind of way. I would say that all the different Black Lives Matter stories are also in there. I can't help but wonder if a lot of the movies that have been left inside of the Oscar universe, so many are not there. So many have been pushed back because they actually had big budgets or they had to make their money back commercially. So that leaves a lot of movies inside this bubble of awards consideration that maybe were never considered to be big box office behemoths anyway. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they need help. They need help from the Oscars.
Yeah, it's the same argument you'd have in another year, in that the Oscars actually are valuable from a commercial standpoint for a certain subset of movie.
Yeah.
And the other thing, so we didn't talk about this at the start of the podcast, but it is worth noting that in the midst of all the craziness that happened in D.C., Sacha Baron Cohen went out and said social media networks need to ban Trump, and And maybe they did. Maybe it had something to do with it. I don't know, but they certainly did do that. And that has been a platform for this guy. It's in Borat, where there is sort of a joke about the character thinking the Holocaust didn't happen because of a Facebook conspiracy theory. And then after that movie came out, Holocaust denials were banned from Facebook. So when you're talking about movies that could fit the zeitgeist, that campaign and that particular actor, writer, performer persona seems to have a good amount of resonance too. So,
absolutely.
You know, there should be.
Well, he's one person. Sacha Baron Cohen is one person who understands how social media actually functions and how powerful it can be. A Thousand Cuts, this documentary about Maria Ressa in the Philippines, is another one well worth watching, because you can see how effective social media can be in fueling the far right.
Yeah, that one looks really troubling to me, but I need to make time for it. And that's one of the things that I keep thinking about is, you know, I have a lot of blind spots when it comes to a wide range of films that could wind up on the doc or international shortlist. So I'm sure that many Academy members have even a wider range of blind spots.
How and do got they this, know what to see? Yeah. I'm having trouble with the foreign language because there's like 90 of them, right? So how do you figure out, you know, you'd look at the ones that did well at festivals. You look, you know, I saw a movie called Hope, the Norwegian film. Excellent film with Stellan Skarsgård. Family drama, really good. You've been promoting The Mole Agent. I want to see the Apples movie from Greece. I want to see Dear Comrades from Russia. I mean, there's a list of them. I just have to work my way through them like everybody else.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, you're also an informed journalist paying attention to festival buzz and talking to publicists and so forth. An Academy member, I don't want to say the average Academy member, because it's such a, even with just a couple thousand people, it's such a diffuse group of
they're well informed. They're
some
well
are informed. More informed.
The ones who pay attention
app,
are.
Right? So this year you have this app, and let's say you have an Apple TV, you can turn on your TV and you have this app and you can just like scroll through these movies. But it's, at what point do you decide to hit play, say, if you're going through the foreign, the international?
Well, this is why they're complaining. They're complaining about the quality of the movies that are available on the portal, because anybody who wanted to spend their $12,000, you know, dollars or whatever it is, you know, they could get in. So the foreign language has nothing to do with paying. That's just a question. As soon as they're eligible, they're deemed eligible, they're put up. A few of them have been thrown out because they have too much English. But they're on the portal and they can work their way through. Exactly. How do they decide? A lot of them fall asleep. This is the really bad thing about online viewing. If you decide, hey, I'm going to do a double feature tonight and it's 11 o'clock at night and you're watching some godforsaken rural drama from, you know, Greece, you could fall asleep.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is it's like, it's not just that you could fall asleep, it's that you might not be getting the optimal experience, because binge watching a wide array of movies from different parts of the world, of different subject matters and styles, is not the same as watching Bridgerton.
And they may not, exactly, they may not be as compelling, page-turning, if you like, kind of dramas that with narratives that keep you riveted to the screen. They may be more avant-garde. They may be more challenging. That's if you're in a theater sitting there for 2 hours, you have to see it.
You
one
committed.
Way or the other.
You committed. Yeah. And maybe you have a better experience for other reasons, like just because, you know, when you're watching something on a big screen with the optimal sound and image, it is a different kind of experience no matter what. And then sometimes for an Academy screening, you've got a Q&A afterwards. So as a critic, I'm not saying I need that, but as an Academy member, maybe for some people it helps contextualize what they're looking at. And I appreciate when you talk to people who are voters who really take this process seriously and they really want to look through their options and they're not just voting for their friends or whatever.
Well, and the whole whining and dining aspect has been taken out of it. There used to be this sort of core group of people that you would see on the
circuit. They go to everything.
Having
right.
a drink, having a nosh, you know, socializing, getting out. All of that's gone. So how do they make, I think that's a great question, Eric. How do they decide what to watch?
Well, I think they read IndieWire. And
they're also
they're
also being invited to a lot of these virtual screenings, and sometimes they are sent food, believe it or not. They are actually lured again by such things.
The campaigning is happening, but I think if you are an engaged member of the Academy and want to vote wisely, then you just can't browse your options on the app. I mean, watching things blindly is what valiant programmers do, but at this stage of the game, it really is, it needs to go beyond that. It's just not practical to assume that people could go through this, you know, epic list of international submissions and wind up finding the best films.
The ones who are serious about it are going to have to be, they're going to be given colors, they're going to join certain groups, they're going to have to see a certain number in order to be eligible to vote for the nominating committee. So, they have to take their job seriously.
Those rules matter for sure. And of course, we still don't really know how the next few weeks are going to play out. I mean, usually as you know better than anybody, you got festivals like Santa Barbara that are sort of like the last wave of festival
Palm
boosters.
Palm Springs, yeah.
Palm Springs, which is not happening except for the virtual gala. So that's something.
The Academy Award part, yeah.
Right. And the Spirit Awards are going to be way later. On Monday, we'll have the Gotham Awards as a virtual event. So it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, that does.
How many people, I mean, that they stream those things, and I watch it sort of religiously every year, and it's just like this single stream of this person standing at a podium, whoever it is, accepting the award, you know, no change of, there's no cutting, it's just a very elemental thing. How many, five people watch that thing?
Well, what I'll tell you is that I've been going to the Gothams every year for a long time, and it's always valuable to be in the room because you do feel like the entire New York indie film world is crammed in there. And there's like an hour or so of cocktails where you're wandering around, you're talking to people about Sundance stuff and you're hearing how people are doing. Some people who are on the broader award season track are there too. So being on the ground is really valuable. What its currency is for any of us when it's just a string of acceptance speeches, I don't really know. I mean, Nomadland is nominated for Best Film, and if it wins that, I suppose that's another notch in its belt, and so it doesn't hurt.
It'll get reported, yeah.
If something else wins that is not an award season favorite, I don't know if that, you know, means now it suddenly is, but hey, if First Cow, you know, gets a leg up from the Gotham Awards, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, so I guess we'll have to wait and see on that front. But in any case, next week, we can talk about what happened at the Gothams. And we can come back to Sundance. Hopefully, we'll have a little bit more of a sense of what's worth seeing there, if anything is going to be there that might itself be an awards contender, and any other buzz that's out there. But unless they invoke the 25th Amendment, and that's all we talk about next week, I look forward to further movie conversations.
I'm hoping it gets, it was funny, Stephanie Zacharek on Twitter was saying, hey, aren't I allowed to talk about movies? Like, she got in trouble for talking about movies yesterday while all the craziness
that
was going on.
I hate that. Now
of
is not the time.
Of course she's allowed to talk about movies.
Now
My
is not the time.
God.
The time is always, if anything, you can make the case that it's a better time to talk about movies when everyone freaking out about other stuff, because the movies are always there for us, right?
Thank God. Yes.
Thank God. All right. I'll see you next weekend.
Bye, Eric.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.